The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. We're straight off the golf course. I've got my dad here for another weekly recap to see what he thought of Judson Welcher, the last Karen Reed clip, the Commonwealth resting, and the defense's first witness. We're also going to talk about some of the judge's rulings, which he found to be pretty horrible. So make sure you guys hit that like button. Make sure you are subscribed. Make sure you've five-starred us on whatever podcast platform you listen to, because we're going to get into it all right now. All right, Dad, welcome back in here for another week of the Karen Reed trial. And most of it was taken up with Dr. Judson Welcher, the Commonwealth's accident reconstructionist, who was here to tell us how it is possible that this accident happened, smashing the taillight, not breaking any bones from John O'Keefe, scratching his arm that way, throwing his body in some way to where his back of his head hit the ground, ending his life. And we hear one more clip from Karen Reed, then the Commonwealth rests. So where do you want to start?
Well, we can just start with how he started out, and that's his credentials, because I know that, you know, the Commonwealth wanted to make sure they distinguished him from Burgess, and they wanted to make sure that he had all the right credentials and everything was legitimate. And I'm sure they checked that before he took the stand this time. But that was really important because they had to make, you know, there's going to be people on the jury that are looking at Welcher to justify Burgess. I mean, they may say, oh, Burgess was a big bozo, but here's Welcher, vice president of the company, basically Burgess's boss. And so if Burgess is really credible, if Welcher is really credible, then, you know, we can rely on Burgess. So they had to, again, establish his bona fides. And I think they did do that. I mean, the guy's legitimate.
I agree. He's legitimate, regardless if you like his demeanor or not, or the way he acts or speaks up there. His resume speaks for itself, basically, his position in the company, his experience, not just his education, obviously his education as well. But when it came down to it, I think that can cut both ways. Because I think on one side, it can say, oh, he is really legitimizes Burgess. On the other end, it's like just highlighting how bad that Burgess education was and the fact that Brennan tried to just gloss over it and act like it didn't exist.
But, well, you know, though, it's funny that a lot of people, I think, misinterpreted what I said about Burgess in that, yes, I know he lied. And yes, that does hurt his credibility to lie about his education. But when you come down to the data, his education was irrelevant. And so that's why I'm saying that to Burgess, we're not really looking at his education to justify what he said, but you are looking at it for Welcher. Welcher is a man giving opinions as opposed to just taking numbers and adding 2 and 2 equals 4. So I think there's a difference.
I think there is, but I think you know as well as I do, jurors pick up on things and latch on to them that maybe we don't even know sometimes. And I do think it's possible they latch on to that credibility issue and they may just throw him the baby out with the bathwater, basically, for everything that he has to say. We'll see, though. I mean, I don't think usually jurors aren't as harsh as the people watching or maybe even lawyers watching to where they don't have that vitriol because this person's an expert. They're paid. They come. They show up. And like you said, they'll probably most likely give him the benefit of the doubt to some point when it comes to the data. But let's get to Welcher. What did he testify to on direct from Burgess? And how did he put it together? What did you find interesting?
Well, he started out, and I thought it was kind of funny, but he started out with, he went on Google to find out how many minutes it would take to drive from Fairview to
Meadows.
Meadows, Fairview to Meadows. But, you know, when you do that, that's the average drive. Doesn't take traffic into consideration. Doesn't take weather, snowstorms. Doesn't take that into consideration. So I thought that that was kind of a ridiculous way for him to start out. And then he goes, to the trigger points. Again, Burgess. So he had to rely on Burgess for the trigger point. So now we're seeing seeing where he has to rely on Burgess for his opinion and all those trigger points and how many minutes there were between the three-point turn and the hit and those kind of things. But the key was he had to change his report because Burgess changed his numbers. So that was a real key that I think everybody's going to emphasize in their closing arguments is how can you rely on Welcher because you can't rely on Burgess. And it's obvious that Welcher is relying on Burgess because he had to change his report.
He even said more accurate data.
Right.
Like the updated report.
Right. Which again, matter of opinion. But so he said that, so he moved into that, but then he moved into the, again, common sense comes into this. 74% throttle. I thought that that was an interesting point as well. Most of the jurors know what it's like when you're going in reverse to put down to basically 74% is three quarters of the way down and to then go into reverse and get to 24 miles an hour. A key point was that doesn't necessarily mean that at 24 miles an hour, that's when he would have, that's when she would have hit O'Keefe. Because it just means that's the data point that shows how fast he went when he was backing up. She might have hit him at 20 miles.
So, this is just a pet peeve of mine. You keep saying he and she, and you just said when he went backwards, you meant she with Aaron Reed. So we'll try to use names as much as we can. Which I know it's hard for you because you're not as invested in this, so everybody's name doesn't come to the forefront. But
Karen Reed,
you're saying when Karen Reed was going backwards in the car, 24 miles an hour is not necessarily when she hit John O'Keefe at that speed, which I think is important to them because I think they realize, even though he gave that test case, which I really want to hear what you thought about Welcher's test case, because if you're hitting somebody at 24 miles an hour, that is very fast. That is a serious collision. How the heck do you not break a bone? They will explain that to us, but she could have hit him going 12 miles an hour or 13 miles an hour, or, you know, at any point from zero to 24 miles an hour was his point. But I think that highlighted just how inexact his testimony was.
Right. And he couldn't, you know, we're going inexact. If you go, and I know that you've talked about this as well, go to his, when he tried to dispel the trap, the traverse argument. And, you know, she could not have backed into the traverse and caused the damage to the light. And he went through a lot of photos and rulers and
diagrams, everything.
Yeah, and he did a pretty good job. I think he did do a good job of showing that this argument that she hit the traverse really doesn't hold water. And therefore, you can just discount it. He spent, I know it has been more time, but he spent more technical argument on the traverse than he did on the Lexus. I just was very disturbed by the fact that he did not do things that a normal expert would do on that Lexus. One of the things that he didn't do is he broke that taillight, I guess, at 8 miles an hour or whatever it was that he did. Did that taillight actually break when it hit his arm? I don't know. And I don't know where on the 8 miles an hour, I don't know necessarily how he knew that it would break at 8 miles an hour.
Well, hold on. There's a couple questions there. So hold on. Let's take them one by one.
Sure.
Are you asking me if I think the taillight broke when it hit his arm?
No, it didn't break when it hit his arm, right?
You have to.
But no, I'm talking about when it hit Welcher's arm.
Oh, no, of course not. No. Yeah. It didn't break when it hit Welcher's arm at 2 miles an hour, but it had to break when it hit John O'Keefe's arm, as far as the Commonwealth is saying, because how else do you get those scratches? It would have to break. You didn't scratch your arm on the ground. That's one of the big problems. And then the 8 miles an hour, he just said it. He didn't test it, which would have been so easy to test that for failure. And I know you want to talk about some stuff that we do with our experts and have done in cases, but testing something to failure is very simple and it's very easy. Now it can take a lot of time and money, but it's pretty simple and it's pretty easy to test something to failure, and testing that taillight to failure would have been easy. Now, he could say we had to freeze it first because it was cold outside or whatever, you know, variance for the elements, but he didn't even try to test it. He just said it as if it was a fact.
But you know what? I'm wondering, did he test it, and did Brennan not ask him about that? Did you just forget to test? Well, then how did he come up with the 8 miles an hour?
I believe he said that's what the research shows, or that's what the literature says. I think that's what Welcher said.
I don't know. I mean, tell me that someone actually has literature on a Lexus taillight that says it breaks at 8 miles an hour. I find that hard to believe that he did not do, that there was not something somewhere where someone took something that, you know, they've got these machines that measure the amount of force that you're using, that there's not something somewhere where there's actually a test where a machine hit it at 8 miles an hour and it broke, whatever 8 miles an hour could be. And I think it hit a brick wall instead of a human skin.
Well, yeah, that for sure makes a difference. But I think my guess is when he says the literature says that, it's somebody doing a test and then writing an article on their test would be my guess. I really don't think Welcher did it, or we would have heard about it, because that's good for the Commonwealth. Why would they not ask him if that was actually part of his testing?
I don't know. And another thing Welcher did, again, that I thought he tried to do, and it was more theatrical than it was real, was, oh, I saw the car, and, you know, as opposed to ARCA didn't see the car. We bought a Lexus in order to duplicate, you know, what was going on. ARCA didn't do that. I dressed in clothing that matched John O'Keefe's clothing. ARCA didn't do, what difference did that make? But he did all these things because he wanted to differentiate his work from ARCA's work. He couldn't do it technically, so he had to do it with theatrics, because it doesn't, none of that stuff really matters if you didn't actually do the technical work on it. Just having a Lexus doesn't mean that you know what was going to happen. And wearing his clothes doesn't mean you know what was going to happen if you got hit. Getting hit by at 2 miles an hour doesn't mean that you know what was going to happen that night if he got hit at 20 miles an hour. So he did a lot of theatrics, and that's all they were. When it really came down to it, there was nothing concrete in any of that stuff, which, again, I thought was pretty interesting.
So a couple things in response to that, because you just brought up some stuff I hadn't thought about before. Number one, a lot of people were saying wearing the clothes was creepy. I thought it didn't add any value, like you said. Number two, I agree with you completely that he beefed up inspecting the Lexus and all this stuff. But in reality, he could have used any other car because there were so many other variables that he changed that it made it inexact. And that was kind of the common theme throughout his entire testimony. Lastly, the 0 to 24 miles an hour, he could have been hit at any, you know, speed. I feel like Welcher proved it'd be pretty hard to knock somebody over going 2 miles an hour. Like, Welcher barely moved at 2 miles an hour. So would that have even knocked anybody over? So he's kind of disproving theories in that we know, I mean, I wouldn't say we know, but logically, if you're hitting somebody going 20 or 25 miles an hour, I think the injuries would be worse. We can cross 0 to 2 miles an hour off because you don't even knock somebody over. So now we're really limiting the speed that would have made this all work. And that's a problem for the Commonwealth, who has to actually prove a collision happened the way they're saying.
And I know we're just dealing with the direct, I'll just deal with the direct. He, on direct testimony, admitted that he approves of the use of dummies, because he used a dummy to show the backwards fall of O'Keefe when he hit the ground. You know, so he did. He used one of those, you know, we've seen him on those commercials and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he used those dummies to show how he hit the back of the head when he fell on the ground. So why is it, if he would use those dummies to do that, he would not use dummies for any other purpose? I believe that Brennan actually rushed Welcher's testimony. I mean, that's just my opinion. He rushed him to get him to try to get him to the final conclusion without really beefing up, you know, what he said and how he said it.
Go ahead. I think Brennan ignored the problems in his case like he's done the entire time in this case. And he did it again with Welcher. And it was also interesting, you're right, that he used the dummies for the head injury, but it was imperfect. It was concrete ground. We don't know. There's so many variables we don't know. Did he fly into the ground and hit? Did he just fall from standing? Did he fall from crouching? Those were all the reasons he gave. Well, hold on. Those are all the reasons he gave as to why he didn't do the crash dummy with the car, because there were way too many different variables, but there were also way too many different variables with falling backwards and hitting your head, but that didn't stop him from doing that experiment. Smart money moves are all about getting more out of every dollar. And with Rocket Money, you can easily find forgotten subscriptions and have them negotiate bills for you, putting money back in your pocket. And with all those savings, Rocket Money practically pays for itself, because it can be wild and sometimes embarrassing when you look back and see all the subscriptions that you still have that you didn't even remember getting in the first place, let alone the fact that you still don't use them month after month after month and you continue to be charged. Well, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $550 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when they use all of the app's premium features. So cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/lawyer today. That's rocketmoney.com/lawyer, LAWYER, rocketmoney.com/lawyer.
And, you know, that the other thing, when you talk about the car coming back, right? Well, let's say, and I think that he was trying to say the car was, that the collision occurred at 20 miles an hour. I mean, that's
he said clearly, he said, I did not say that. When Alessi said on cross, so you're saying it happened at 20, he's like, I didn't say that. Where'd you get that? But that was clearly the inference they want the jury to take.
Right. The hitting of the head. That's another thing that I thought was just, you know, that's the only injury that you're going to have. Is being hit in the head with that. I guess it was a small laceration above his eye. I mean, come on, you get hit with a Lexus SUV hits you, let's say it's 15 miles an hour. Because the theory, the Commonwealth's theory is she deliberately went in reverse. Well, you don't deliberately go in reverse to hit somebody at 2 miles an hour.
True.
So, you know, and you're down at 74% throttle. So, I mean, you know, there's a, you know, you're picking up speed and you're moving. So that's it. That's all they got. And that's his explanation for that. So that lacked, I mean, common sense, that just didn't work.
You know what? This doesn't work. You just made another argument I hadn't thought of this entire trial. I haven't really considered second degree, to be honest, but is going backwards 2 miles an hour, 5 miles an hour, 7 miles an hour, is any of that reckless? Is any of that intentionally dangerous or an act that is likely to seriously harm somebody? I don't think going backwards 2 miles an hour is, or 5 miles an hour is. 24 miles an hour in the snow when you're drunk, sure, but they have to prove how fast she was going backwards towards him to me to even get there. So there's just so much that they are leaving out there in the open, hoping the jury is making these just leaps. You have to make these leaps, these mental leaps to even get there. And there's just so much reasonable doubt filling those holes. And your explanation of what you took from Welcher is just highlighting that even more.
Right. And that is, that's what I took from him. I tell you, and the other thing I took from him, again, these are overall impressions. And I think the jury sees it the same way, is how inexact his testimony really was. Mm-hmm. How he really couldn't give you any concrete theory, I guess is a good way. He really couldn't give you a concrete theory. He could say that he thought that this happened, but he really couldn't make it concrete. And he couldn't give you, because so many things were really left in the open because of the terrible investigation that was done.
Right.
You can go back to the investigation to find out why Welcher couldn't do this. Now, you and I, again, we talked about this, and we're going to theorize in a little bit how he could have done a better job. Mm-hmm. But because of the bad investigation, it left so many things open that he could not give any real tangible reasons for what happened, how fast the car was going, none of that stuff.
See, he was saying that like it was a good thing. You know, I'm an engineer. I don't deal in possibilities. It could be out and shooting the car into outer space and things like that. I will say this. I do think the one good thing that came from his little experiment with the paint was that if John O'Keefe stands in a certain way, that taillight could line up with his right arm, elbow, forearm area. That is one thing I feel like he proved to me, that it is a possibility that the taillight would line up with his arm. That's something in the first trial they didn't even put in my mind as a possibility because they didn't do any of the testing like that. So at least I feel like he said there is a scenario in which it's possible for the taillight to line up with the arm. That is woefully short from a moral certainty of proving that that's what actually happened. But I do think he showed me with that, you know, paint experiment that it was a possibility.
Well, yes, but on the other hand, you know, look at the injury.
You know, there's a million other possibilities that make more sense to me.
I know.
But look, that's just a possibility.
I know. So you know, that was his, again, his direct. You know, that's what I got. That's what I got out of his direct, is that he was inexact. He did the best he could. He had a theory, and he used Burgess's numbers. That's really all I got out of his direct. They could have done a lot more with him if he was better prepared, or if Brennan, and I've got to believe Brennan's a smart guy. If Brennan had sat down with him and said, look, these are the things we need. And I think Brennan might have been scared to have him do other stuff because he might have been scared as to what the results of the other tests would be. And that's why I think he also got him at the end, got him done, gave his opinion, the conclusion, or the however you want to call it, what his opinion was, and sat down and let Alesi then do his cross-examination.
You keep calling him Alesi? Brennan does that too, and everybody thinks that Brennan does it on purpose to be a jerk. So I can only imagine what they're thinking in the comments right now as you keep calling him Alesi.
Alesi, right? Alesi.
I think it's Alesi, and I think I've done it once or twice as well.
Okay, Alesi.
It is what it is. But there's one other thing I wanted to mention. He did also say, to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, how did he say it? These injuries are consistent with being hit with a car that is identical to Karen Reed's Lexus. So that is in evidence now that Brennan can argue that helped them get over their JOA argument. They couldn't get this case dismissed. And he did get that into evidence. So there's that too. That's another big point he got on direct.
Right. He did get that, but he also got the judge to instruct the jury to ignore the scientific certainty statement.
One of the times. Yeah.
Right. Because he said he was asked about consistency, but then when he answered the question, he goes consistent and to a degree of scientific certainty. And the judge then instructed the jury after an objection, instructed the jury that they are to ignore the scientific certainty statement. And I think that really helped the defense, that the judge instructed them to ignore that. And they could only say, you know, consistent. One of the things.
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying. I was confused at how you were saying that. But yeah, the consistency, not when he said that is what happened, which is such a jerk move to say that is what happened. You know, you can't say that. Although in Massachusetts, people are telling me the experts can testify to the ultimate issue, which
they can.
I think is kind of wild. That's wild. Imagine that.
Yes, they can. They can do that. I know that. But in this case, it was the consistency they're allowed to testify to.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Come try new Skyline Dip Cholitos at your neighborhood Skyline today. A warm, soft tortilla filled with their amazing chili and cheese with an extra layer of cream cheese and crunchy Fritos corn chips at participating Skyline restaurants for a limited time.
The other is, and again, going to that, we'll go to the next day because he's still on cross on the next day.
Yeah. Well, no, we haven't gotten to cross yet.
You mean I know. Direct? He's still on direct on the next day before we get to cross. He talked about the side swipe and how he's such an expert on side swiping. Apparently, he wrote an article on side swiping.
And clipping,
yes. And how it's not uncommon to have no lower extremity injuries when you have a side swipe. I thought that that was reason I thought it was interesting is, again, jurors still use their common sense. And I think that that kind of a statement, most jurors are going to say, that really doesn't make sense to me. Later on in recross and stuff like that, it becomes even more vague about these lower extremity injuries. But I thought that that saying things and testifying to things that really defy common sense kind of, I guess, doesn't help your case. And that's the way he ended it.
Well, how about the demonstration, not demonstration, the example case that he had worked on where he showed the injuries and they had all sorts of abrasions and bruising on the lower back, buttocks, and legs and broken ribs. It's like, yeah, that's the injury I expect, or those are the injuries I expect when you get hit by a car going 25 to 30 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy. That came out on direct.
Yeah, you put up that chart with all, all the injuries. You know, I mean, come on.
I would absolutely love to blow that up in closing argument. Put this as the Commonwealth's Exhibit 17 and look at these injuries. That's what somebody looks like when they get hit by a car.
Yeah. So,
all right, so let's get to cross.
Okay, well, of course, we have the billing, $325,000, which, again, that's a lot of money. And I don't know if they got, frankly, I don't know how they got their money's worth, hearing his testimony. The other key, the updating of the PowerPoint. That PowerPoint was updated because Brennan told him to update the PowerPoint. I think that was really key because they have been constantly denying that Brennan was involved at all in these updating, and that May 8th report that we heard about before, and now he updates his report. And what he says is, I updated it because of Burgess's new numbers. But now we have Brennan actually inserting himself and saying, hey, update that PowerPoint. And he updates the PowerPoint. So that just shows Brennan is actively involved in changing this testimony right in the middle of trial while the trial is going on. So I think that that
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much a juror is going to care about that, honestly, but I guess we'll find out. Well, I get they keep pointing it out. I mean, and us, we lawyers care more about that because we know how bad it is. But like, I don't know how much with all the crap going on in this case, I don't know how much a juror. I really think the defense is really highlighting it. I get it. I'm frustrated. I think the Burgess stuff was the biggest problem. The Welcher stuff I didn't find as problematic because of what Burgess did. And I would just keep pointing the finger back at Burgess. I think they need to be careful about how much they really highlight that, honestly.
Okay. Well, you might be right. Yeah, but I'd say it hit me.
I agree. And I think it's a huge deal in how we prep for the case, but I don't know. There's other major problems.
Yeah. And then another thing is the fractures. One of the good things I think that he did say was when he brought up the fact that there were no x-rays. Of the arm.
I never heard that before.
Yes. So I think that that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because everybody's arguing, injuries. That arm could have had 50 fractures. They just didn't stick out from the skin.
Hairline, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. They could have also all sorts of stuff, all sorts of injuries.
I mean, you would expect bruising and other things, and usually the ME can tell, and you trust the expertise of the ME doing the medical exam, but it's possible, I guess. It's possible.
But no x-rays, big deal.
Sometimes x-rays miss fractures. So
how do they do that? Now, on the other hand, if there was a fracture, and I don't know if the ME testified to this, was there swelling?
No swelling, bruising, abrasion. Well, there were abrasion type cuts, but there was no bruising, swelling, anything that would indicate a fracture. Right. She said no fractures, I believe, the ME in her report.
Right. No, I don't think so. I kind of remember, I thought the testimony was she didn't mention whether there was or wasn't fractures in the arm. She talked about fractures in the skull. She talked about other things, but I don't think she actually said fractures in the arm. I think that Walsher testified to that.
I don't remember that.
I remember right. And then what else did we talk on the cross? Okay. I thought Alessi, is that right? Did it right?
Yeah.
Alessi, I thought he was kind of boring in the beginning of the cross. He tried to out-intellectualize or out-academic the expert. I think that Alessi, in that case, was getting a little bit full of himself because he thinks he wants to show that he's smarter than that expert was. And I don't think that that benefited him at all.
See, I don't get that. I don't get the full of himself vibe at all from Alessi. I get the, this is what I'm here for. This is my role. My role is to go battle of the brains with these experts, and I'm going to play my role as best as I can. He definitely, out of all the lawyers in that room, he definitely does not give me the full of himself vibe, personally.
Well, that's not, and maybe I misstated it. Not full, is that he wanted to be the intellectual.
He wanted to take that route. He wanted to go right. He wanted to, which is what we talk a lot about. Like if we were to give, you know, a presentation, or even when, you know, we were in law school or presentations given to us, they always say, be very careful about going after the expert's expertise and battling them on that. Like battling a doctor on the medicine is a lot of the stuff that I talk about. Battling the doctor on the medicine can sometimes be dangerous. And Alessi really goes for that type of battle. And there's going to be a lot of people watching that say, oh, he's better, he's smarter than him. It's like, I think Alessi might be smarter than these guys, but when they dedicate their life to this one thing, they're probably going to be better at it than somebody who is as good of a lawyer as Alessi is, because Alessi is dedicating his life to being a lawyer. And there just is a difference. And, you know, we've talked about this before, how we become experts, especially criminal cases. Like when we had that Medicare fraud case, you became an expert on the Medicare codes and, you know, what you can do when you take vacation and you have a doctor subbing for you, and you become an expert on those things, but not really, not as much of an expert as the people that wrote the code. Right. And that's what you have to be careful about.
And that kind of a thing. And you're right. You know, Medicare trial, I did. I became an expert on the area of the Medicare that we were trying the case on.
Right.
I have to say that 24 hours after the trial was over, I forgot all of that.
Right.
But I kept it in my head for the course of the trial. And I'm sure that's what Alessi is doing. He is researching like crazy in order to, like, for instance, I think he argued something about Newton's law. If I remember.
Oh, right. Yeah. Newton's first law, Newton's second law. I agree. I was like, I just was like, I don't know, man, maybe some jurors are that into it, but I think there's a simpler way to cross that witness personally.
Yeah. So, you know, I just don't think that the jury, that it really hurt the expert's credibility by sitting there and arguing Newton's law with it. Another thing is the expert started to get very combative.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Cross-examination. That's what you want. And if nothing else, if you don't out intellectualize him or anything like that, if you make him come across as such an advocate for the prosecution, so that he is no longer just an academic, which is what you want an expert to be, an academic up there teaching the jury.
Like not the brain surgeon.
Yes. Not someone that advocates for the defense or for the prosecution. I just tell you the truth. I tell you the facts and the science.
I actually feel like the defense's first witness did that pretty well. I thought he was a lot more neutral. He gave when he had to give. We'll talk about him, but I thought Brennan got some points on cross because he wasn't really arguing them. He was like, yeah, sure. Yes, you're right. If all the data's wrong, then I'm wrong. It's like, there are certain things you just have to give as an expert sometimes, and that happens. This guy would not give an inch, and I think maybe some jurors love him, but I think I'd be willing to bet there's at least one juror that really, really did not like Dr. Welcher and how he was acting on the stand, especially for a guy that said he has no dog in the fight.
Right. And which I thought was kind of funny with Cleo involved. But anyway.
Cleo. Yeah, definitely Cleo.
Chloe. Is it Chloe or Cleo?
Chloe. It's Chloe. Cleo and Alessi went into a bar.
Hey, please. You know.
It's I know.
My shit. Yeah,
I know.
So in like blue point test, you know, the blue paint test. You know, had to say it was a test, you know,
versus an exercise or something. Yeah.
Right. Not 20 miles an hour. And a great thing he said, which is really important, is not enough info to do a test. He said that several times during Alessi's questions, not enough info to do a test. And I would say to you that he's kind of right. But a real expert would have made some logical theories based on what he did have in order to do some kind of test to see how it turned out with some theories, with some prognostications about how it's going to go.
Yeah, so, like when you have unknown variables, and again, I'm not an engineer, not my expertise. But when you have unknown variables, but you have a theory of the case, you can, as an expert, hypothesize about if this variable is this, what happens? If the variable changes to that, what happens? Is there a scenario where the taillight breaks and scratches John O'Keefe's arm, but is not enough force to break a bone? Because they were talking about how much force and pressure does it take to break a bone, how fast you have to go to crack the taillight, 8 miles an hour. That just has to be wrong. There, he said that. We're sitting here right with our common sense. We know that is not right without other variables. Because if it goes 8 miles an hour into a pillow, it's not going to break. 8 miles an hour into a bat, it might. But what about an arm? And you can do tests like that to tell the jury, okay, 8 miles an hour when we hit a brick wall, it broke. At 12 miles an hour when we hit a couch, it broke, you know, because a couch is softer, whatever. You can input those variables to help a jury understand where along the spectrum does something like this happen.
And I know we're going to talk in more detail about what you're just talking about now, about what we would have done.
We can do that now. I mean, we don't have to keep teasing it. We can do it unless, I mean, is there something else you want to get to first?
The only other thing I wanted to make sure that we talked about, and we'll talk about in our demonstration, is he threw McCabe under the bus, I thought, because the part about the car, the Jeep, you know, and it was Ryan Nagel, I believe it was McCabe and Nagel.
I think Nagel said he didn't see the Jeep, I think.
Is it? Okay. But he totally discounted seeing another car out there. And he had to do that, I think, because if you look at going 34 feet forward and then you go backwards
50, whatever it was. Yeah, 87 feet total. Yeah.
It's 57 plus the 34.
I think it's 87 total, but whatever.
So you're going forward 34, backward total 87. 87 is 57 plus the 34. Go back.
Okay. No, it's not, but okay.
Okay. You're going to hit it.
I get what you're saying. Right.
If the Jeep was there, you're going to hit the Jeep.
I mean, every time.
You know this case better than I do.
Absolutely.
If the Jeep was there, you're going to hit the Jeep.
I got to be honest, though. And again, love him or hate him, which most people are going to say they hate him. Hank Brennan has done a much better job this trial of hoping the jury's forgetting that. Because last trial, Lally was having everybody talk about where every single car was, where they walked, how they walked by the yard and they didn't see the body. And that was all really effective stuff for the defense. Brennan has not done that. This was weeks ago. The jury could have forgot McCabe even said that. That doesn't have to work into Brennan's very vague theory that he's trying to simplify and say, Karen Reed said she did it. So if she said she did it, she must have done it. And that's all we need. He is simplifying this to a level where Welcher was like, yeah, I don't think that's really what the testimony was. There was a white Jeep. It's like, except for their most important witness, potentially. But again, hoping the jury forgets is a strategy for some lawyers. That absolutely, that's why you bury certain testimony.
But again, with me, I remember the fact that there was a Jeep, right. And I remember that he totally discounted, the expert here, totally discounted McCabe's testimony about that. And I thought that was a little ridiculous.
If you want to take it even further, we know that Jeep was there because we saw video of Brian Higgins driving that Jeep to the Canton Police Department at, you know, whatever, 1:30 in the morning.
1:30. It was 1:30.
Well, we know that Jeep was there at 12:30. It had to be. Now, where was it parked? It could have been parked somewhere else, I guess, theoretically. But the only place that somebody has said it was parked was behind Karen Reed's Lexus. And it couldn't have been 50 feet behind it.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense.
Right. So I thought that was important.
Key cycle, they're going to have to show, and they've already kind of tried to hint at that key cycle's got to put her car somewhere else in the possession of Canton Police, I think is what they're going to end up saying. But it doesn't make any sense that she went backwards 24 miles an hour for 87 feet and wouldn't have hit the Jeep. And also no tire marks or torn up yard or anything like that from the tires either. So it didn't go up on the yard either, which again, they're trying to say it did. And he was like, yeah, it's possible they did, but you know, I can't really tell.
Well, all right. So let's go back to what we would have done with this expert.
Sure.
And what you can do, is not, we're not so unique. This is what you can do with an expert. This guy is a high-end expert. This company they hired is a high-end company. They got offices all over the country. This guy came from California to testify in this trial. So number one is, even though you don't know exactly where the body was, you know approximately that the body was within a certain area around the flagpole. All right. So you know you can draw a circle on this area where the possible body was. So number two, a car, there are formulas. There are computers that'll tell you this. A car going X number of miles, coming in contact with a human body, how far can that human body travel in the air after hitting the car? Will it travel 7 feet? Will it travel 12 feet? It'll give you that kind of theoretical decision within, again, there's that certain zone, like a circle that they can draw. So not only could they come up with a theory of where the body could have been, how far it traveled if she had hit the car, hit the vehicle going X miles per hour, they could have done, and I always, you know, I like to refer to these as cartoons, but they could have done an animation showing the hit on the corner, showing the hit of his arm.
Most courts won't let you do an animation like that if you don't actually have record evidence. If you're really guessing this much, they're probably not going to allow an animation. But I do agree with you that he could have said, if his body landed here, and we know he's 215 pounds, there's only, you know, a range of outcomes of where the collision could have happened. And if you find out a range of outcomes of where the collision could have happened, then you know about where her car would have had to be if it went forward 30 feet and backwards 80 feet. Like you could have narrowed this down and at least given some sort of a range. They didn't even try to, because none of it really matches up. None of it really makes sense, but you can absolutely do more than they did by changing some of the variables and testing them.
I think, and again, it may have been McCabe's. Didn't somebody testify the body was 7 feet from the curb? I thought that
Welcher said that, but yeah. I think there's other evidence that says 12 feet.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, they rolled him over, they moved him,
And it's not that big of a yard, right? It's not that big of a yard.
All sorts of stuff. So they could have done it. I think it would have been, they could have had a logical range where the body was. I think they did show, if I remember right, I don't know if it was this witness, but they did have a Google Maps kind of situation of the house. They could have taken that. They could have put the approximate place of the body, and they could have, I know what you're saying about, but they could have taken her car and they could have moved it in an animation 34 feet forward and then the 80 something feet back. They could have done that because they've got evidence that the car traveled like that. So they could have done an animation showing the car's movement, showing the position of the body. They could have asked this guy, is it possible? You know, have you done experiments to show, would the body have been located here, the car moving back this way, 3/4 throttle, where would it, you know, they could have done a bunch of stuff and had this guy do all this. I think they were scared to do it. I think that they were scared to do it because I think that maybe it wouldn't have come out the way they wanted it to come out. That's my theory, because they didn't really use this guy like they could have.
And I do think he's right in what Welcher said, that Alessi would have picked it apart if he would have done these other demonstrations about how this stuff is wrong and how there's a million other possibilities. So once again, they chose the ignore it, pretend like it doesn't exist route. But we've also used experts in ways to show how things can fail, whether it's gym equipment or seat belts or, you know, different parts that you use it over and over and over again until it fails. And some experts will sit there and use a, you know, lat pull down machine until that wire fails, right? Or put a seatbelt, unplug it, plug it, plug it back in until it fails. Is it 50,000 plugs? Is it 1,000 tricep push downs or lat pull downs until the average one of these fails? And you can get that data and you can explain that data and you can testify that data. It would have been so easy for him to prove what it takes to crack this taillight or make this taillight explode into 47 pieces. And the other thing that is interesting that he didn't do is, how did the entire taillight explode away from the car? If she's going backwards, and wouldn't some of the taillight be pushed in to the taillight, right? Wouldn't some of the pieces end up in the taillight or, you know, towards the car, not away from the car, just based on how, you know, all the laws of physics work? There were so many things that don't add up there to how everything ended up at its final rest, but they just ignored it.
How about, haven't we used biomechanical experts to show how a body moves when something happens. So they could have shown if he was hit with the taillight, how would his body have moved? You know, if it was in the theory in his arm. Okay. And I guess the theory was he was holding a glass. I guess.
Yeah.
So just holding a glass, hit in the arm. All right. How would your body move if you were hit in the corner of the Lexus? And they can show it would have twisted 45 degrees to the left. I mean, they can tell all this stuff.
Well, what's funny about that is Trooper Paul, who I do want to get to as well. He tried to do that at least. Say what you will about Trooper Paul. He tried to talk about the pirouette that he was hit, spun around and hit on and fell on his head, which ended up being ridiculous, but at least he tried. At least Lally, here's what I will say about the difference between Lally and Brennan. At least Lally tried to connect the dots and give the jury a theory. I don't even feel like Brennan has done that. I literally don't even think he has told the jury what he thinks happened. He's just like, really seems like she hit him with the car, doesn't it, guys? It really seems like she hit him, and he's hoping that's going to be enough. I really feel that way. And I think it may be a winning strategy, and it may be a better strategy. But that is what the strategy feels like to me. Because well, she said it, it must be true.
If, like I said, I think I said this weeks ago, I hit him. They have to believe that I hit him statement was a confession. And that's what it is that, you know, you've got to, they've got to be relying on. Because and prosecutors also are relying on the fact that most people think that they don't prosecute innocent people. They prosecute guilty people. So there's people are going to think that, and they're going to use that word, I hit him. Because, I mean, what other evidence they have that she hit him other than the statement that I hit him? I mean, they don't really have anything else. They've got nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's important. So let me ask you about Trooper Paul. He gives a report basically last time. He does an investigation. It's so bad that the Commonwealth wants to bury it. They want to act like it doesn't exist. They're doing everything they can to block anybody from talking about what Trooper Paul said happened in this case. The defense wants to ask the new Commonwealth witness who read Trooper Paul's report, has photographs and references to his report and data from his report on multiple slides, has pictures of the work Trooper Paul did with Trooper Paul's own hands. And Judge Cannone's like, no, you can't ask him about that. What did you think about that?
That's a huge mistake. And a lot of times I've said, I don't think it's going to be reversed. This is one that could cause reversible error. Courts repeatedly say, the greatest search for the truth is cross-examination. And you restrict the defendant's cross-examination, you've really restricted him from having a fair trial. Restricting the cross-examination. If I was Brennan or whoever, I would not have given him Trooper Paul's report.
Right. The problem is he needed some of that data, but I feel like he could have done it himself. I don't understand why he didn't just read all of, yeah.
He didn't need the report. He didn't need Trooper Paul's report. He could have done his own work and developed his own, and everything would have been just fine. He didn't need to review Trooper Paul's report.
I think that they should have been able to still ask him about Trooper Paul's theories. Like, okay, let me walk you through this, Dr. Welcher. Do you think this is likely to have happened or have, and you can just give it as a hypothetical and then later bring in that that was Trooper Paul's report. Here's why I think she gets saved on the appellate issue. I think they are going to go into Trooper Paul's report with ARCA, their own witnesses, and the appellate and higher courts. If Karen Reed were to lose, this was going to be an appeal, they would say it was cured enough because they were able to bring out Trooper Paul's report. They were able to ask him at least a little bit about Trooper Paul's report. The jury knew who Trooper Paul was, and they could do it that way. So it's gonna help the material problem that it is right now, as if Trooper Paul's report would never come in.
Well,
definitely different.
Well, you're doing so. I'm just talking about as we sit here today.
Yeah.
As we sit here today, I think that was possibly reversible error. And it was, again, there was no need to give it to him. The other part was that Bello, the medical examiner as well, anything you give an expert to review, anything, not just an expert, anything you give a witness to review in preparation for their testimony is fair game in cross-examination. I don't care if the expert looks at a dead fish. If they look at a dead fish as part of their work in formulating their opinion, you can ask them about the dead fish. It just doesn't make sense. What she did, I'm just shocked that she wouldn't do this, that she wouldn't let them cry, especially the fact that, I mean, come on, he changed his report. He changed his PowerPoint. I mean, he based on Burgess. So, you know, how can you restrict the cross-examination at this time when you've let the prosecutor get away with everything?
After she said, I will allow you to have a robust cross-examination of this expert, and then she limits it. It's crazy. It makes no sense. I think that was a horrible, horrible call.
Yeah. Bello also. Bello, I think that said that, right?
Sporty Bello, yeah.
Yeah, the medical examiner. The fact that she wouldn't let them cross-examine on Bello when he admits that he used part of her report in his report. So that didn't make any sense either.
I agree. Okay. Anything else from Welcher before we move on?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. So let's get now to this clip that they ended on because they did not end on Welcher. They had one more piece of evidence they wanted to enter, and it was yet another clip from Karen Reed herself. So let's take a watch and listen to Brennan presenting this final piece of evidence before the Commonwealth rested their case in chief.
Commonwealth moves to introduce and play clip 26.
So I thought, could I have run him over? Did he try to get me as I was leaving and I didn't know it? I mean, I've always got the music blasting. It's snowing. I got the wipers going, the heater blasting. Did he come and hit the back of my car and I hit him in the knee and he's drunk and passed out and asphyxiated or something? And then when I hired David Unetti, I asked him those questions the night of January 29th. Like, David, what if, I don't know, what if I ran his foot over or what if I clipped him in the knee and he passed out and or went to care for himself and he threw up or passed out and David said, yeah, then you have some element of culpability.
What did you think with the Commonwealth ending with that?
Wonderful.
I agree. I agree. People are like, oh, those are out of context. It's so obvious. The jury's not going to buy those. I was like, I think you're dead wrong. I think those are, here's something that I said. Tell me if you agree or disagree. If she loses, it is in large part to those clips, to all of the clips that he's played of her own words.
Tell me how, I hate to say these things, but how in the world could any lawyer let her get on TV, be filmed, being interviewed, not only saying those things, but saying what her lawyer told her about that's you have an element of culpability.
Did you notice that she said when I hired David on January 29th? That's what it sounded like she said. Now listen, we know how you and I think about that. Probably a lot of people watching this channel have started to understand, hire a lawyer, don't talk to anybody. But your average person, like everybody out there watching, listening right now, before you ever got into, you know, watching and learning about the judicial system, what did you think when somebody hires a lawyer before they're even arrested for anything and tells you they're talking to their lawyer before they're even arrested or charged with anything? You think they're guilty. And that's what this jury could be thinking based on these clips. Now, Brennan is not going to argue that in closing. That is a totally inappropriate argument. You have a right to counsel. He cannot say she hired Unetti on the 29th, therefore that's consciousness of guilt. He's not going to argue that, but he sure as heck played it in front of him. And will a juror think that?
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
It's really problematic.
And she also basically repeated the theory of the prosecution's case.
No, that's where he got his theory. clipping.
Yeah, that's the theory of the prosecution. So here it is. Here is the defendant on the, what was it, 29th of January, I think you thought. Here's the defendant on TV saying at the very beginning, let me tell you what I think may have happened.
It's bad.
And I was, she didn't say this, but I was drunk. So I'm drinking. I hit somebody and they die in the snow. That's the second count. That's all they have to prove for count two. And they have a guilty on count two. I mean, I just can't believe the lawyers let her do this.
So what I think happened is they thought they were going to win the first case. And this was being filmed like simultaneously, some of these as the first trial. And so it was going to come out afterwards, I guess. I don't know, man. It's really tough. That's a really tough thing. I mean, I don't know if I ever talked to them about it, probably would have to be privately. I would ask, what did you think? If I ever talked to Hank Brennan, I would ask him the same thing. What did you think when you saw these clips for Karen Reed's lawyers? What were you thinking when you let her talk? Right. I mean, that's just, it's really hard to look back at and listen to those now.
I guess was Jackson her lawyer at that time or just Giannetti?
At the time of the interview?
Yeah.
That interview was done like during the last trial, a year ago. All of these people were her lawyer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Way after the fact. These were all done way after the fact.
That just surprises me.
Okay, the defense starts their case in chief. Today is Friday. DeSorga, they're basically Burgess' counterpart who looked at Burgess's data. What did you think of his testimony?
Well, he did a couple things. One, I think he was a pretty good witness as far as witnesses go. You know, he's, you know, all American, clean cut looking guy, speaks well, speaks clearly. I can't tell you that I understood everything that he was explaining or that he testified about, honestly. That's another thing too. I think when they've gone back over these things, they really should have done a better use of charts. Because I think that some of the testimony was confusing. Now, when they had their expert on, they could have done some better charts with their experts. When he was talking about, you know, they showed these pictures, but they also could have done diagrams rather than just the pictures. The diagrams probably would have been clearer than the pictures. But anyway, I think they fell way short when they came to using demonstrative aids during the trial of their expert. But the but with this guy, he was complex in what he was talking about. He was obviously an expert, well-trained. I don't think anybody questioned his expertise. He did say, I wrote it down here, that he found that Burgess's approach was valid. He did make that statement.
Yeah.
So that kind of added to Burgess's credibility. But then he went and said that when Burgess expanded his numbers, again, it was hard for me to understand, 3 out of 30 possibilities showed that it happened before the phone was turned off. And then he talks about, but then when you look at this other number, all of the possibilities were beyond when the phone was turned off.
So what they're trying to do is say that John O'Keefe's phone was still in use for some period of time after they're saying the collision occurred, which they're also saying is impossible because he was immediately incapacitated or very quickly incapacitated and wouldn't have been able to use his phone. And so if he was still using his phone, then this key cycle is wrong for when the collision occurred that they're alleging occurred. That's what the defense is trying to do. So if he keeps using the phone after this triggering event is completely over, then this couldn't have been what incapacitated him because he had the capacity to use his phone. That's what the defense is trying to get this with. But I agree with you. A lot of it is confusing.
Yeah, I think what I got out of it was no one can know. I mean, that's what I got out of it was.
There's proof of it.
Yeah, there is no proof that is beyond a reasonable doubt regarding when his phone was turned off or on or when the collision happened or didn't happen. That's what I really got out of it is no one can prove it. Nobody really knows.
I agree. And I mean, that's all good for the defense. And Brennan's cross. So I like kind of his style on cross. It's pretty aggressive, probably too aggressive for a witness that's this calm. But all the stuff he was saying, like, well, if the data's wrong, well, do you know if this is a phone? Do you know? It's like, well, does any of that matter? It's Burgess's data. It's the Commonwealth's data. You even started out with, you didn't even do anything. You just are criticizing somebody else's report. It's like, yeah, and now you're criticizing him for criticizing somebody's report. What did you think of the cross?
I thought he did fine. I mean, he brought out the key things. One is he brought out that Burgess's approach was valid. He brought that out. But he brought out that there are some possibilities. Even this witness will have to say that there may have been 30 possibilities, but yeah, there were three that would comport with the theory that the prosecution is putting forward.
Yeah.
Well, is that reasonable doubt? Three out of 30 possibilities. I mean,
pretty bad.
Does that do you any good?
And then Jackson on redirect brought out that, depending on where you move the numbers, 3 out of 30 is like best case scenario for them. And all of these are, every individual scenario is just as reasonable as another scenario. That's not good for the Commonwealth. And yeah, I think Hank Brennan brought that out on cross.
Well, you know, and going back, okay, this guy, quote, was an expert. All right. But you really got to go back and say, did Welcher really hit a home run for the Commonwealth? You know, and that really, the Commonwealth's whole case depends on Welcher.
Yeah.
And the statements from the defendant. That really is the case.
Agree.
And so now they've got to go with experts. And now we're going to, I guess, if you want my guess, ARCA, probably the next witness. What do you
That's
think?
What you would think, but I've heard that Lucky Laughlin may be going next. I heard the Proctor buddies might be. I've heard all sorts of things, all sorts of different reports. I don't know. Who cares? We don't have to sit in here and try to prognosticate. We will react to whatever happens. But at the end of the day, Friday, they proffer a witness who's Proctor's buddy, who was in the text chain with him. Brennan basically baits them like, you want to put these texts in, call Proctor. You want to put Trooper Paul's report in, call Trooper Paul. He's baiting them as if he wants them to call him. The defense's response is not, we'll call Proctor, pounding their chest. They're saying, we might not want to call Proctor and we shouldn't have to get these texts in, number one. And number two, Brennan's acting like, oh, you guys should be forced to call Proctor. Everybody knows dang well they can call the lead investigator in this death case, which is what normally happens, and they're choosing not to. So he's not going to bait us into it so he can cross-examine his own lead investigator. What did you think about that exchange, and what do you think about the defense potentially not calling Proctor?
I think that there's if they can get away with putting in the emails without calling Proctor, they'll do it. Yeah.
What about the termination? What about the termination information? I think that's pretty good too. How do they get that in without him?
I don't know how they're going to get that in without putting Proctor on the stand. Even the text messages, honestly, from some of the ones I've read, and I probably haven't read them all, I wonder what relevance do some of those text messages have to guilt or innocence in this case?
That's easy. It goes to the bias of the lead investigator. It absolutely goes to the bias of the lead investigator that he hates Karen Reed. He wants to make sure she's guilty. He's insulting her, and the guy that owns the house is not going to catch any crap, which is a cop, because he's a cop. I mean, that really goes, and it's definitely not hearsay because it's not used for the truth of the matter asserted. I thought Yannetti did a great job arguing that. These are insults. You know, I'm not looking for nudes. She's got this accent. She's hot, but no butt. She leaks poop or whatever. Like, that's obviously not used for the truth of the matter.
Are those really relevant? I mean, do those have any probative value?
I mean, I think they do to show his bias and his credibility issue for the lead investigator, that he was biased against Karen Reed and biased in favor of the homeowner of 34 Fairview.
I guess that's the argument, but I think that this judge may think at least some of those. Now, if the message relates to the investigation, that's a different story. But just the ones that just, you know, slam, you know, nudes or, butt or, you know, those kinds, I can see her keeping those out. I can't, because they don't relate to the investigation. They have no probative value. They don't go to guilt or innocence. I don't know how they're going to justify getting those in. But if they're able to get in these text messages, they don't need to call Proctor unless they really think it's important the jury knows that he got fired and why he got fired. Because we know the judges rule that they're going to let that get that in.
I just don't know why the defense wouldn't call him. Like, what can Brennan do on cross that's going to be so great that he hasn't already done with Buchanan? Like, I would call him. I wouldn't be afraid of it. I wouldn't, like, if they're trying to play this game of chicken or he's not going to make me call him, I'm like, be my guest, dude. I'm going to call him. He's so good for us. He looks like such a squirming jerk on the stand. Now, again, like I said before, the only way it backfires if they really like Proctor, they think he's so engaging and they feel bad for him. That's really it. He's not going to have some aha moment with the investigation. What the defense doesn't want to do, what Yannetti argued, is he doesn't want Brennan to be able to, on cross-examination, lead him through his entire closing argument, basically, and have Proctor confirm it, which he already did with Buchanan.
Well, I don't see Proctor, except for that, would you just say, Proctor can't hurt him. Because Proctor cannot testify to anything that hasn't already come in.
I agree.
Been inferred. So you're right. You're right about that. And they can get some really damaging stuff in, you know, depending on their theory of defense. But they can get some really damaging stuff in. But before they call Proctor.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapist provides specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
I would put Arca on. I would want to see how good Arca comes across as experts before, because I think that might have some kind of an effect on my decision to call Proctor.
Yeah, maybe you save some of the risky witnesses like Higgins and Proctor and all that, to where if you need them and you need to really poke some holes and make the jury hate the other side, then you call them. But if Arca hits it out of the park, maybe you don't need to get back into those muddy waters again, and you just move on.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. I think that they should weigh it after they put a mark on.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
I don't think that's a bad point. Any other thoughts on DeSorga or the text messages or anything else that happened at the end of the day today?
No, nothing else. I guess they're starting up on Monday morning. So,
yep. Full day. She said Monday morning. We'll see if next week is a full week. But that's all we got. You guys let us know what happened in the comments or what you think. Oh,
I did hear that Karen Reed said they had 2.5 weeks of defense.
I heard 1.5 to 2. So different reports, but I expect it to be longer than last trial for sure. Oh. So somewhere between 1.5 to 2.5 leads us to about 2 weeks. We just had one day today. So maybe 2 more weeks of defense case. I think the rebuttal case is going to be a couple days. I don't think it's going to be a quick rebuttal.
No.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. We know we got a lot of experts. I'm looking forward to see exactly what they do and how they do it. But thanks for joining me for another recap and to get your point of view on all these witnesses. We'll bring you back next week to do it over again. You guys can always let us know. My dad reads a lot of the comments, so throw some questions you have in the comments. He'll try to take a look at them and answer some of them next week when we come back to talk about this case again. But for now, that's all we got. Make sure you hit the like button. Make sure you guys are subscribed. We are so close to 500,000 subscribers. Maybe we can do it during this podcast if you guys all go and hit subscribe. That's all we got. Till next time, we are out of here. Thanks for watching another episode of The Lawyer You Know. If you enjoyed the episode, please hit the thumbs up and share with your friends who may be interested here on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And don't forget to check out The Lawyer You Know podcast with new seasons dropping every quarter. If you have a case you want to talk to us about, if it's a personal injury case, wrongful death, catastrophic injury, car accident, or slip and fall case, please email us at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. And of course, all these links I just mentioned are included in the description below on this episode and every episode. So until next time, this is Peter Tragos, The Lawyer You Know.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.